As Greg mentioned earlier, my name is Matt Warner. I am the founder and CEO of BlockNote.com. I'm also a blogger at the National Catholic Register and at my personal blog, FallibleBlogman.com. A lot of the stuff that I write about, because BlockNote is a registration and communication tool, and part of my passion for creating it and doing it had to do with helping the church communicate and using new technologies to help us communicate more effectively. A lot of the stuff I end up writing about has to do with the state of new media in the church and kind of what we're doing well and where we could maybe improve and all that kind of stuff. So this is new media in the church, the good news, the bad news, and the hope. You guys want the good news or the bad news first?
I want the hope.
That is, does anybody ever want the good news first? You do. I've never met anybody that wants the good news first. I always want the bad news first. So we'll start with the bad news. All right. The first bit of bad news is that the Catholic Church is out of control. Of their mess, of our message. And what I mean by that is that our story is not being told by us. Most people have misunderstandings about the church. They don't know what we teach. We don't know what we've done, what we're doing, what we stand for, and why. And that's largely because we've kind of opted out of using new media in so many different ways. And so we've treated it kind of, we've had, you know, a lot of trouble transitioning from old media to new media, where old media we had all these traditional kind of gatekeepers. We could try to control the message a little bit more, but of course that's all changed now. And we think that it's kind of the cautious thing to do. Yesterday someone mentioned, you know, that the church's approach to new media is sort of this overly cautious one. And we can mistake that for, well, it can be wise to be cautious, of course, and the church has shown a lot of wisdom in how we've embraced new media. But at the same time, being overly cautious actually ends up not being cautious at all. And that's because doing nothing and maintaining the status quo, a lot of times, is the most risky thing to do. And we feel like it's the cautious thing to do because it's stable and it's what we've always done. But in this case, it's actually very, very risky. But we're afraid to open up comment systems. We're afraid to reach out and let the church body or maybe non-Catholics express what they feel about the church. We're scared that they might say something mean or hateful or wrong or that there might be sinners in the church. And so we think that the way to combat that is to try to close ourselves off. But of course, all of that's happening anyway. People are having those conversations. People are saying things hateful about the church. People are spreading misinformation about the church. People are telling our story for us. And we've chosen to not be a part of the conversation in a large way. Now, obviously, through efforts like CNMC, and we have some great shining examples of people that are changing that. But as a whole, we're not a part of the conversation. The next bit of bad news is that Catholics are not really using Catholic new media. But they aren't really using Catholic old media either. Of course, this is a product of a much more profound sort of spiritual crisis in our country. Just to give you a few stats. There was a recent Caris study that was somewhat controversial because we don't like the idea that people aren't using Catholic new media. And of course, there's wrong ways to interpret the data, and I think that we want to be careful not to do that. A recent study showed that 2% of Catholics follow religious or spiritual material on Facebook. 6% read religious or spiritual blogs. Old media, 15% read religious or spiritual books. 11% listen to Catholic radio.
So by and large, Catholics in general are not using Catholic old media or Catholic new media. And so it's easy to kind of maybe come to the wrong conclusion that, well, I guess it's not worth it or it's not working. But that's actually the exact opposite way, wrong way to look at it. The truth is that it's not that Catholics aren't interested in Catholic media, it's that they're not interested in their Catholic faith. And that's precisely the great opportunity that we have with the media. Because that large portion of people who aren't engaged in their faith and aren't interested in their faith, a lot of them don't even go to Mass. A lot of them would be considered fallen away Catholics. The largest denomination in the church is, or in the country is Catholicism, and the second one is fallen away Catholics. And so many of them just aren't even coming. And so we haven't done a very good job of reaching out to those people. And then, of course, we have a lot more that come to Mass, and we're not doing a good job of reaching out to them either. Which is one of the reasons that we created FlockNote in the first place. Because we saw that there's all this great Catholic media out there to be consumed. But at the very basic level of people coming to Mass, they're not getting inspired about their faith, they're not connecting with their parish, they're not being engaged at the parish level. And so I think starting there is a really effective place to start. But of course, the way we reach out to those people, and especially the way we reach out to all the Catholics that are inactive or passive or fallen away, is through things like new media. The technology is not going to bring people back to the church. You are. And people are. And just like Sister Flanagan was talking about, it's those relationships and connections that bring people back to the church. There's not some magic bullet of technology or new media or anything else. It's what new media lets us do, and that's to go out and build real, meaningful relationships with people. It allows you to take that content and present it in a way that makes sense to somebody you know, because you have a meaningful relationship with them, because you know them, and they know you. And they respect what you think because of the way you live your life. That's how we're going to bring people back to the church. That's how we're going to get people interested in their faith again. And then from there, people will be very interested in Catholic media. There's a huge audience out there for Catholic media. We just have to get people inspired about it. And they're very excited about the media part. They use new media all the time. They're just not that excited about the Catholic part right now, on a whole. But of course, as Sister Flanagan pointed out as well, that we're not all about numbers either. Numbers are important and they matter, but that's not the most important thing. The most important thing is that we are at a service to another, capital A another. And of course, through all those efforts, God will do amazing things for us. And I see a lot of that happening already with this community, with the CNMC, and all of you being here. And so it's very, very hopeful for the future. One more bit of bad news that I'm particularly passionate about, and that's online search. And I've written about this in a few previous blog posts. But, and I say this charitably, we stink. We're terrible at online search. And what I mean is that when people go and search on something like Google for things that they genuinely are interested in, they're not getting Catholic answers to their questions. I'll give you a few examples. If you search for Jesus on Google, Wikipedia is the top one. There's no Catholic answers anywhere on the front page, and you have to go a few pages to get to one. And right over here, where's my laser? Here it is. Here's the Mormons at the top right here.
Ow.
Mormons believe in Jesus.
They've been paying.
Let's look at another one. Here's a search for God.
Oh, look, right at the top, there's the Mormons. The Mormons are everywhere in Search Online. And you can see some of these are, that's actually a paid, it's hard to tell on here, that's a paid advertisement. And that other one on the side over here, these are paid advertisements. You can pay for certain search keywords on something like Google. And so they're getting their exposure out that way. And we can debate whether or not that's a good way to evangelize, but they're getting their message out, and they're telling their story. And so when people come and ask, search for things like Jesus and God, fundamental things at the heart of being human, and things that they've heard culturally if they've never been a Christian or maybe they grew up with and fell away from, they're not getting Catholic answers to those questions. And this is a really important way. How many people, when they have a question, pretty much start with Google? I mean, that's a lot of people. I would say most people these days. And if not Google, some other search engine. It's the first place I go. There's another one. Who is God? Mormons. Right at the top. That one's not Mormon. Look down here. These are actually the real rated search results. The fifth result is Jehovah's Witnesses. Who is God? Well, you'll find out what the Jehovah's Witnesses have to say, but you won't find out what the Catholic Church has to say about it. This is such a powerful and untapped potential here for evangelization, and it seems really indirect, but making these connections and allowing people to find answers, this is possible. It's possible for that when people ask, who is God, that we have a great Catholic answer right up here at the top that people find. And even think bigger than this. These are really simple search terms, and maybe they're not really the search terms somebody would actually put in when they go to a site when they really have a real burning spiritual question. Maybe it's, you know, why is my life so hard? Maybe it's, how do I pray? Real questions, and we can go out and figure out what are people asking for, what kinds of people ask that question phrased that way, and have an amazing answer show up at the top up here. This is not something that just happens. People work for these results, and there's certain ways technically that we can learn how to do it, and by creating great content that answers those questions. And so this is a really good judge of how well we're answering the questions people have about things they care about. And we don't think about it from that term sometimes. We think about it from us explaining things to people instead of what people are asking and what they're interested in, and starting there and then taking them further and deeper into the church. So anyway, that's kind of one of my visions and passions. I would love to see an effort within the Catholic Church, an organized effort, a greater effort of trying to come together. We have a lot of great answers. We have the best answers to all of these questions and any of these questions people would ask about what it means to be human. And who is God, and who is Jesus, and who am I? We just don't have them out there for people to find out about. So they're getting all these other answers first. Okay. I don't want to be too negative. It's easy for us to complain, especially in the Catholic new media world. We spend a lot of time complaining about how people don't get it and how we're behind and how people need to catch up and all this kind of stuff. But I started looking at this when I was preparing for this talk, and I was trying to look at some of the good things that we're doing. And it's actually pretty amazing, I think. I started just trying to pull up some examples, and I started thinking about how much it's changed in the last few years. A short time, a really short time, like 3 years since the first CNMC. And I think about how different it is now than it was 3 years ago. Things that exist now that didn't exist then or nobody knew about. Here's a few of them. We have bishops who are tweeting and blogging. Word on Fire in the Catholicism series. Catholic Vote. Spirit Juice Studios, Catholics Come Home, SQPN and CNMC, the bloggers at the National Catholic Register, the Catholic Channel on XM Sirius Radio and all the shows that go with it, Catholic TV, Catholic Media Guild, Open Source Catholic, Catholic Tech Talk, Catholicon, the Catholic New Media Awards, the DivineOffice.org, eCatholic, Parish Geeks, 1 Billion Stories, whyimcatholic.com, endless amazing Catholic blogs, Tweet Catholic, Flock Note, Call to Communion, Catholic Answers, news.va, catholicmom.com, Pope to You, a Vatican Bloggers Conference, the most comprehensive book on the media and the new media and the church to date, all kinds of Catholic mobile apps, the Catholic Media Secretariat in the Archdiocese of Boston, the new media efforts in dioceses like Sacramento and St. Louis, podcasts from faith and science to food to Harry Potter, priests talking movies on YouTube, the Austin Catholic Media Group, and so many, many others. And there's way more that I didn't even name, and I'm not even going to try to name them all, and probably many of the things you guys are working on would fit on this list just the same. And I just started thinking about almost all those things either didn't exist 3 years ago, or we didn't know about them yet. And I just think that's really, really amazing. And so it's easy to kind of get discouraged a lot because we're always feeling like we're behind, but we've done a lot of stuff. And we're starting to see a lot of fruits of all the work that we've been putting in, and the get-togethers like this at the CNMC, and all the individual efforts that all of you are making and people like you. And there's a lot more exciting stuff to come. Another bit of good news is that this guy gets it. And it's not just because he enjoys a really big beer every once in a while. And it's not because he uses an iPad, because he really doesn't. But he gets it because he says things like this. When we find ourselves drawn towards other people, when we want to know more about them and make ourselves known to them, we are responding to God's call, a call that is imprinted in our nature as beings created in the image and likeness of God, the God of communication and communion. That may not sound like it on the surface, but this is one of the best explanations for why social networks are so popular and why social media is so popular. The church is an expert in what it means to be a human being. And all of these things apply on such a profound level when using new and social media. And the great wisdom that the church has on these things is a huge contribution already to how people in general, even non-Catholics, are using social media. But I think it's going to be an even bigger one, because as we get into more trouble, as people misuse it and as people abuse it, they start to realize that there's something to this right here. And so the church's wisdom in employing this kind of approach to engaging and embracing new media is going to, I think, get more and more attention as these tools get more and more popular. It's funny because reading a lot of social media experts out there, a lot of them sort of come to these conclusions on their own. You know, they kind of learn from different challenges and barriers that they have, and they come to these kind of profound truths that they think that they came up all on their own, you know. And of course, the church has been saying these for thousands of years. And so that's really cool. And I think that that's really good news that the church has been able to embrace things like this so wisely, and really cool that we have a guy like this leading us in the process. So moving ahead, a few of my hopes and things and reasons for hope. One of my hopes is that we rekindle our missionary spirit. I think that we have a lot of parishes and organizations in the church right now that are in maintenance mode. And they've been through a lot. And they're just trying to survive. And they're weary about more people coming through the door, unfortunately, because they can hardly take care of the people that are already there. And I think that that's really a shame, because the church is a missionary church, and we have a mission, and we have a lot of work to do. And those groups that were showing up at the top of the search results, those are missionary churches. They have a missionary spirit. The Mormons, the Jehovah's Witnesses, all those people are going out and finding ways to find people and make connections with people.
and start that evangelization process. So I think, I hope that we continue to move to that. You see a lot of efforts. You see a lot of efforts springing up now of people reaching out and trying to reach out to fallen away Catholics and Catholics in general and getting more engaged and non-Catholics and all these different ways. And that's one of the great powers of new media, is seeing all of those things take place. You know, and we've talked about it a little bit already today, but the, you know, the stats being small and you know, feeling sometimes like we're not making a very big difference yet, is totally blown away by all of the firsthand experience that we all have whenever we make those connections, when we meet somebody and help them in their journey, when we're helped in our own journey by new media and connecting with each other and all that stuff. And we see the real power of it and what's happening with it, and that all is going to explode in the next 5 to 10 years in a really big way, I think. Another hope is that there's less blaming of others and more doing our part. This goes back to some of our complaints. And even just in general about the church. It doesn't even have to necessarily be new media. But it's easy to sit back and complain and say, well, the church needs to do this and the church needs to do that. It's not doing this right. But it's easy to sit back and whine about it, and it's a lot harder to get up and do something about it. And so I'm hopeful. Of course, all of you here today are here because you want to do something about it. And we need more people like that. We need you to recruit more people like that. And we need to take the attitude that maybe if our leaders don't get it, that it's not their fault. Maybe it's our fault. Maybe we haven't made the case strongly enough yet. Maybe we haven't explained it to them well enough yet. Maybe we haven't made the relationships we need to make first before we start explaining it to them and helping them do it. And so making meaningful relationships with church leadership, with those doing other work in the church, and then helping them understand it better. Maybe we don't get it yet. But how many people in here have a pastor or bishop that they feel like just doesn't get it? Yeah. No? Well, that's good. Not as many as I thought I would see. Because most pastors we come across with our work with Flock Note and things like that would fall into that category. And it's not necessarily their fault yet. They just haven't been shown or they're uncomfortable with it. But don't get into that excuse and don't cop out by saying, oh, they just don't get it. If somebody doesn't get it, figure out how you can help them get it. And I think that that's an important part. So, well, so many of the barriers in the church is the discomfort of a lot of the leadership and people already doing work in the church. And so those, rather than, I mean, we have to do development of our own Catholic content and creating all of this great Catholic media as well in parallel with it. But one of those barriers we need to break down is to have people like you going and sitting down with those people and explaining to them, this is why it's important, and showing them why it's important. And if you can't show them that, then maybe we're not doing a good enough job of that. Another thing that I hope we can do a little better is recruiting talent and leaders. We have a lot of people, important people in the church, necessary and essential people that love their faith and are very good at understanding their faith. We haven't done a very good job of recruiting people with certain skill sets and talents that maybe don't have the same understanding of their faith, but they could work together with people who do to do a lot of really powerful things. Creating media, different either creative people, graphic people, video people, photographers, people with ideas, people that know a real need in the church that needs to be addressed. How do we connect and recruit those kind of people to help us get those things done, who are doing those things in other ways in the secular world with their job, professionally, and doing it really well? All of the professionals that we need to do anything we want to do in the church are sitting right in the pews every Sunday. We just haven't reached out to them, and we haven't given them the opportunity to use their skills for the church. And the other part of that is leadership. A lot of people who are struggling in the church to accomplish things and move things forward haven't been given and trained in the right leadership skills. They don't know how to communicate a vision. and to be an administrator and an organizer, and to be somebody who can communicate that vision to others and lead them and build a team and delegate and move things forward. And so many things that we need to do is to recruit leaders, not just theology experts, which we need, obviously, really importantly as well. But this is an area that I've seen really lacks, especially at the parish level. And I think that will be key for us moving forward as well. You know, the ladies complained for decades about, you know, where's our role in the church? You know, how can we be leaders in the church? And it's the answer staring us right in the face. There's all this work to do. We're waiting for leaders to step up and do the work. And you guys are doing that by being here, but we need many, many, many more. And so we need to encourage that and help people to do that. Another thing I have hope for that I think has a huge potential is something I call entrepreneurial evangelization. And my question is, where is the Catholic Silicon Valley? Right? Where is the Catholic Y Combinator? Where is, I don't know, has anyone heard of sites called Indiegogo or Kickstarter? Okay, they're these sites that let people sort of pitch their project, whatever it is, and then people can go online and donate to support it. So they'll have a goal and they'll say, we need $10,000 to accomplish this project, and here's what we're going to do with it, and here's how well we're going to do it. And then people can go on there and they can support the things that they want to support and donate directly to those different projects. How cool would that be if we had that for all these different Catholic new media projects that we want to do? If we had a site, there's an idea for somebody, a developer out there, a CatholicKickstarter.com. Okay? Something where all of these projects, people could go and say, we want to do this in the church because we really need it, and this is how we're going to do it, and these are the people we're going to use because they're really talented, and all we need now is some funds to go do it. But you got to make the case that you can do it well and that you're organized and that you're going to be a good steward of those funds and money. And you make that case on there, and then individuals with money could come on there and say, I'd like to support that, and give their money directly to it. And immediately those people have the money they need to go do their project. That's the kind of things we could be doing with a lot of Catholic projects that we're not. And even on a bigger level of venture capitalists, there's a lot of people in the church with money who want to put it into things in the church. They just don't know where to put it. So they happen to give it to somebody they know or someone that asked them for it. And of course, there's plenty of good causes to give it to. But there's also a lot of really big opportunities to do some big things in the church, especially using new media, that we're not able to bring everybody together on. And I think the key is bringing together ideas with talent and funds. I think those three things need to come together, and that's the idea of having something like a CatholicKickstarter.com or maybe an incubator kind of group that brings together who are our most talented Catholics in the country that are the best at creating media. Who are the people with the ideas and the leadership skills to go and apply those to real problems in the church? And then who are the people with the money that want to support it? Because all these things exist in the church. We just haven't done a good job of bringing them all together. And so a lot of times we have people with great ideas, but they don't have talent or funds. We have the great talent, and they don't have the money, or they don't have the leadership to go and accomplish, or they don't know how to apply their talents. Maybe they're sitting in the pew still and they don't know what to do. They don't know how they can help the church. And they need somebody with an idea to come along and say, hey, we need you to do this for the church. And of course, you have people with money that aren't being connected with the right ideas and the talented folks that can get stuff done. And so the key is bringing all of those together in one place. And I think that that's something we're going to see, I think, in the next 5 to 10 years. And hopefully sooner rather than later. Because there's a lot of people, there's a lot of talented people sitting around that want to use their skills for the church. And there's a lot of people with ideas, many of them in this room. And so we just need to get the right resources. And I say funds because it's money, but even there's all kinds of ways resources could help people. And there's resources in the church that could help people, not just money. But that's going to be one of the primary ones for accomplishing any kind of big new media project or anything like that. And many of these ideas would be attractive to normal investors.
people that, and not that profit is the goal here, but that it could sustain itself. You know, yesterday somebody gave the example of the Knights of Columbus. They're an excellent organization to look at, to learn from. That they provide a real service to the church that actually supports everything they do and then some. They give millions of dollars away every year to different things in the church, and just in excess of what they already do and run in terms of their organization. So there's a lot of things we could do like that, serving our Catholic niche. But even on top of that, there's a lot of donors that they want a return on their investment when they put money into the church. But that return doesn't have to be monetary. The return is, well, we helped all of these people. The return is we created this new media entity that's doing wonderful things. We created this movie or this TV show or this website or whatever that's doing great things, and they get satisfaction from that. But a lot of the people with money are people that have been smart with money their whole life, and that's how they got a lot of money. And so they're not going to just give money to different things that aren't organized and don't have the right people together and aren't using money wisely. And so we have to do a better job, whether it's as a parish or a diocese or as an organization or as individual apostolates or ministries, is show our donors and supporters that what we're doing matters and that we're doing some really amazing things. And that we have to sell them on the idea and remind them and get them excited and inspired about the awesome work that we're doing. I wrote a post recently about parish annual reports, I think is a good example as well. Because so many parish annual reports just are like this like spreadsheet of like, we spent this much money on salaries, we spent this much money on food, we spent, you know, and just a list and some numbers. But what that should be saying is, we baptized this many people. We brought this many people into the church. We organized this huge rally that saved this person's home. We did all of these wonderful things. And that's what people say, you know, I want to be a part of that. I want to support that. I don't want to support a spreadsheet, a bunch of numbers and a bottom line. I want to support those activities. And you can use new media, video, and web multimedia websites, and other kinds of presentations to communicate that in an emotional way that connects with people's real loves and cares and concerns in the church. And when we start to do that, the pocketbooks open up even more, because they say, rather than just giving out of obligation, they say, wow, this is a really neat thing to be a part of, the Catholic Church, my parish, this organization. This place is going somewhere. This is a missionary church. We are looking outward. And I think that's what we're missing on so many levels. We live in really exciting times. And there's definitely a lot of reason for hope. And I get excited every year coming back to the CNMC and to see how it's growing and to see new people coming into it every year, and to see groups like the Austin Catholic Media Group, who is this local group that started up trying to carry on the work of what we do one weekend out of the year and trying to do it in their local diocese. There's so much potential for where we're going with all of this. People need the church, even if they don't know it. And the church is getting out of a lot of challenging times, a crisis, the sexual abuse scandal, and all of this other stuff, and I think we're just kind of disoriented still. But we're starting to engage all of that again, and people are still hungry for God, and they always will be. And the church has something that nobody else can offer. And so that's what we have to focus on offering people. We have to focus on making the meaningful relationships that bring people into communion with that person, with Jesus. And then we've just been given the most powerful tools in all of human history to go out and accomplish that, to tell our story, to engage people, to listen to people, to relate to people, to connect, and to build those meaningful relationships that are going to accomplish the work in the church. And do it with an urgency that we're not just sitting around waiting for Jesus to come back, but that we've been asked to do a lot of things that we need to get done before he does. So I thank everyone for listening today. If you have any questions or comments,
I can take any of those now. Yep.
It seems like Catholics with money are generally older, right? And the new media Catholics and talent are the younger people. So it's like you got older Catholics who have money. How do you know? They might not even be familiar with any of this new media stuff at all. You know, how can that gap, do you think, be bridged to try to help them see that these endeavors would be worthwhile?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think there's examples you can give, you know, of other people doing it and what they've done with it. But I think most of all is not to talk about the technology, but talk about the goal, talk about the results. Because I think those older people, they want to bring people back into the church. They recognize the spiritual crisis in our culture. They just haven't been convinced yet of how to do that. And I think that... I think that it's going to take more time. I think it's happening. But it takes individuals. It's not this sort of impersonal problem. It's the person you know back in your diocese that you're thinking of that has that issue, and you sitting down with them and explaining to them what we can do with this. It also takes us going out and doing some of it and showing, you know, doing a test case, do a little bit of it, get a little bit of money, and go and do a small example and show them how it works. Because maybe what you're thinking won't work, and maybe the older generation that says that's not going to work, maybe they're right about it. And so you have to go out and show and prove and learn how we do that and how it works. And then you can take that example to them and say, look what we did at our parish. We created this, and this was the result. And then say, let's multiply that across all of our parishes and our dioceses. We're just going to need some support and some funding to do that. You know, so you have to make the case for it. And people that have money, that want to put it towards something, they want to know that it's going to be worthwhile. And so it's our job to explain it to them and show them that.
Man, I just wanted to follow up on that. They're painfully aware of the problem in the sense of they don't see their grandchildren at church. I mean, so they're aware of the situation. And depending on who you're talking about, some of those folks, they got their first cell phone because their grandchild got it for them so they could send them a text. Right? So they're aware of some of those instances of new media in their own lives at the micro level. They don't know a thing about Facebook writ large, but they know about Facebook where they can see pictures of their grandchildren. Right? So they have those small examples in their life that we can then take and say, imagine if that were the gospel being talked about. You know, your grandchildren want to connect with you. You know, I mean, they have those examples.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a really good point.
As you've grown Flocknote, have you accessed a network of Catholic philanthropists who would support it, or has it been primarily bootstrapped, and have you grown that way? And my sense is that there's not a network of Catholic philanthropists who are exposed to new ideas, such as Flocknote 3 or 4 years ago, because most of the money flows through diocesan structures, and the diocesan structures take 3 to 5 years to adopt some of the things that the people in this room do.
Right, and that's an excellent question. And the answer is, with Flocknote, it's been bootstrapped to this point. But we're at the point now where we've gotten the attention of people that are like, hey, this is actually a good idea, and you've shown that it works. And I think that's a good example of, we had to bootstrap it for a while and sacrifice a lot of our own, you know, resources to show that it works. And now we're like, well, we're growing, it's supporting itself, but there's so much more to do, we can grow faster and look at all of the potential. And so we've got people that are interested now in doing that. And so I think that was a good, you know, God's doing some really cool things there to answer your question. But we have, over the years, the last couple of years, been exposed to people that were interested in investing. It just didn't sort of come together. But I think the main problem is what you're saying, is that you have individuals out there, and for them it's a little harder to make that leap of, well, this, I don't know anything about these people, Seems like a good idea, I see the plan, whatever, you know. But if you had that network of people that sort of share a little bit of the risk and also the research and understanding, you know, how you, where you're going to invest your money and do things like that. So that's why I mentioned kind of a venture capital group of philanthropists that want to help Catholic groups. And I think, you know, there's been people that have been trying to put that together, a couple of little efforts that I know of, and hopefully a bunch of ones I don't. But it's definitely coming that way because there's individuals that see the potential. And that want to do it, and they recognize that going through some of the traditional routes is just too slow and too bureaucratic for a startup environment. And that's what so much of this new media stuff is. It's like a startup company, you know, and or a startup project or whatever it is. And that's why being able to democratize that a little bit in the sense of allowing individuals to make some sort of market decisions of, well, that seems like a great idea, let's put money into it, is really the power of sort of the free market aspect of startup companies, you know, is that you throw a bunch of stuff up on the wall and then people in general, not big organizations and bureaucracies, don't make the best decisions in terms of what's working, what's not, where can we most efficiently put stuff. You know, individuals do that and smaller groups do that really well. And so I think that's something we can learn from a lot of the startup industry, you know, in applying that to the Catholic market, because there's so much stuff we could do and there's so many great ideas out there. And unfortunately, a lot of the people that have money that want to support things like this, there's people out there that really do. It's just they don't know them. They haven't met people yet. So they end up, you know, they have a small social network of people. And if one of those people have a good idea, they support that idea. But it's not necessarily the best idea. It's just the idea that they had that they could support, you know. And so expanding that, and of course, that's one of the powers of new media and social networking in general, is expanding that network of connecting ideas with funds and with talent.
One of the technologies that is sort of at the forefront of the new evangelization is radio, which is a very old technology, say for satellite radio, I suppose. The experience I have in my local diocese is that there is pretty much zero coordination between Catholic radio efforts, which is often bootstrapped very much. They don't, I think, see a lot of need, or they don't see utility in reaching out in other media, you know, forms of new media, because at some point it's going to cost them some money. And a lot of times it's hard to get beyond the vision of, we have just enough money to get to our next fundraising drive, and we have all these other needs too. How do you see at the local level developing more coordination between Catholic radio and Catholic new media?
I kind of would treat Catholic radio as part of it. I mean, it's kind of neat that new media is just becoming media eventually, you know. So, I mean, it's all, new media is not as new in a lot of ways now. And so I think the same thing would apply with radio, in the way radio employs new media, but also in the way new media or radio can work with individual groups. And I think that's how a lot of the stations have come about, is through their own efforts of finding their funding and doing their drives and all that kind of stuff. But even from that perspective, I think that they need to do a lot better job of, and this is for nonprofits and charities in general, of making the case of why people should donate. Because for me, it's like they're constantly begging for money. And they're never coming back to me and saying, well, this is all the great things we did with your money. And not that, like, it's not a selfish thing, but that's how people work, is they want to know that, well, if I'm giving my money to something, is it being spent wisely?
Just back to the parish annual report sort of idea.
Exactly. It's making that case, and I think nonprofits have to do the same thing. And I talked yesterday about how we social networking, kind of looking at the numbers and the kind of people we do, and a lot of their approach is kind of this big spam approach. Well, we're gonna spam the 1,000 Catholics in our network, and hopefully 50 of them give us some money, you know, rather than let's find 50 folks that really love and believe and would do anything for our purpose and mission, and build those relationships with those 50 people that will donate far more, and they're going to go tell 50 more people each about how they can support media and communicate that mission and vision that we have for the organization or for the radio station or for some new media project or whatever. And so I think we need a shift entirely to a different
perspective on how we connect, with our supporters, and then making the case of why they should keep supporting us. And it's moving from that sort of maintenance mode of constantly begging for money, constantly barely about to, you know, get letters from these every week. You know, it's like, if we don't get money right now, we're gonna, you know, yeah, exactly, we're going off the air and for radio and things like that. And so I think that's not inspiring for people. Like, it's desperate, and so they get help a lot of times and they hang on. But people want to be a part of something that's growing and being and looking forward and going somewhere, not just barely surviving. And so I think even just the way you frame your relationship, even if you are struggling, it is important there for that. Pat?
Questions from the Ustream audience.
Oh.
I know you're like international right now. What are some actionable items for parishes specifically on how they can use new media within the parish to promote their parish life and maybe either help them with money, but just some actionable things that parishes can do?
Sure.
And can you repeat the question also?
Sure. So the question is, what are some practical things that parishes can do to start embracing new media and engaging people at the parish level? Is that right? Okay. That's a really good question. And we spent a good part of a workshop yesterday talking about building our social network, and the parish is one of those. But I think just some really practical things that don't have to cost hardly any money to do this kind of stuff. You don't have to always think so big. Is think incrementally. And think what's a small step we can take. Because so many pastors and leaders in the church, you know, we say, let's do all this stuff. And they go, whoa. I don't feel comfortable with all that. But if you start something with something as easy as like email, most parishes that we talk to don't have any kind of even just a coherent emailing system, which is the most popular electronic communication medium there is right now, is just email. Okay, so forget all the other fancy stuff. And if you're not doing that well, start there. And so get an email list, get people connected, get their contact information, get their email address, and start emailing campaigns. So you drive people to your events, you drive people to your website. They know you're communicating what your needs are, what you're doing, what the results of all of their money and work and everything else that they've been putting into the parishes. So I think it's a communication challenge, really. It's not just you can use all the tools you want, but if you're not communicating well, then it's not going to do any good. And so you have to, number one, create content or create activities like at the parish, or create movements within the parish that people want to be a part of, that people are excited to be a part of, to help support. But then communicate to them. How is it working? Where are we? And then stay in touch with them. So something like email is a really easy way. Text messaging is a growing way. Those are the two best ways to just directly communicate with people. And then from there, you know, tools like Facebook and Twitter and creating other multimedia content like YouTube videos and podcasts of the homilies, those are things that help engage the community further, give them more content for discussion, bring more people into the community, and help build your network. Any other questions?
Back to the entrepreneurial evangelization night. There's a lot of talk. Every now and then you get in a circle where people are saying, well, the whole thing needs to be, somebody on the street, vetted by the diocese, or you know, these projects need to be part of some official structure. And I think part of the deal with new media is that, you know, we can sort of like take a different model and set people free to be able to do stuff, and then, you know, then the cream kind of rises to the top, and you can find the things that are working and work with them instead of having to go through a diocesan structure or something like that. And I think the church now is sort of kind of, after this last conference they had in the Vatican, starting to see that kind of thing as being a good thing. And I think it's kind of what you're talking about, too. And, it's sort of the groundswell thing, you know, with new media to let that go and to see where it takes us. And it's kind of scary, I think, for a lot of people who are in authority, but at the same time, I think it's where it really needs to go, because that's where the freedom and the expression and the creativity come out.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that, and that's what I found as well. I mean, when we first started setting out, when I first started thought of how can I create a really cool communication tool that utilizes new media to help the church communicate, you know, at first I thought, well, this is something the organizational structural church should do. Like, they're in the place to do it. They can say, boom, and let's do it. And, of course, they're kind of the gatekeeper in so many ways of connecting with the parishioners. But over time, I realized that that's not the answer, I don't think. I think that there needs to be some way worked out of what that relationship is and how it works. And, of course, how do we... Yeah, obviously, we're always submitted to the authority of our diocese, and we want to do that. But like you're saying, how do we free up people to not be bound by sort of the bureaucratic structure of the diocese, and really the diocese doing something that they're not really equipped to do maybe right now in terms of doing this stuff? Maybe they don't have the budget to do it. Maybe they don't totally understand it yet. And I think there's some really neat things. I mentioned the Austin Catholic and Media Group earlier. I think they're working through some things with their diocese. They have a relationship with their diocese, and they meet with them regularly. And they're trying to sort of work out what is this relationship supposed to be, while still leaving them free, as you're saying, to be creative and allowing the laity to step up and be leaders in ways that they have the talents. They're the ones that have been trained how to do this. They know how to do it best in so many ways when it comes to using these new technologies, to communicating, all those kinds of things. And so how do we leverage what the church has, which is the most important thing that you can't get anywhere else, and how do we combine that with all of the skills, the skill set, and the ideas, and the funds of the laity, while still keeping it flexible and organic, I guess, you know, like allowing it to happen, like I was saying earlier, with small groups making decisions that end up being helping things rise to the top. There's a process there that needs to kind of happen naturally, that naturally has those best ideas that rise to the top. But the diocese has a huge role, though, in allowing that to happen and encouraging it and giving the green light on things and maybe setting a few guidelines to help people stay within, you know, what where they need to stay and things like that. Bishop.
Matt, you were talking about how on a parish level we have to start by doing the small things first. I think that also, this is for on the archdiocesan, diocesan level too, for larger organizations. That same thing applies on those levels. For example, at the archdiocesan level in Indianapolis, we have a huge amount of space for expansion within the framework of our internet. But right now, every parish has got its own internet address, its own email address. But we have the potential to very easily give every parish and every school and every priest and every deacon and every layperson their own archindy.org email address. And what that does is it unifies it all in one place so that you have the structure there. I think when we're talking about all this social networking, the first thing for us to step back as a parish and as a diocese is to step back and say, do we have the infrastructure in place in a clean way, in a unified way, so that we can then begin to get the message out? And that often takes 5 or 6 months worth of work. And then you have to also be user-friendly, you know. When you change everybody's email address over, you have to send out a letter or an email on their old address that says, here's how you create or begin to use your new archindy.org email address, those types of things. That's just my little bit of wisdom in all of this, on a much larger scale than just a parish level.
Absolutely, and I think that's great that you guys are thinking that way, and I think that the more bishops I talk to and the more diocesan leaders I talk to, they're moving on this stuff, and I think that in some ways we have to be patient because it does take time and it is incremental, and I think the best way to do a lot of these things should be incremental because there's pastoral issues, there's, you know, you've got to convince people, you've got to build a relationship first. You don't just go and say, you know, we're doing this, let's do it. That's not the most effective way to get them on board with your mission and your vision. And so there's a process there of communicating, and it comes from our leaders, like our bishops, but it also comes from individuals and sitting in the pew, stepping up and sitting down with your pastor and saying, I want to share something with you about something really powerful we're doing, and convincing them on a personal level. And I think we haven't done enough of that yet, and that takes time, and there's a process to that. There's another hand somewhere.
Oh, I was just going to say that Blessed John Paul II, he wrote an encyclical for the laity on in Christa Fidelis Laeis, that they can take initiative on their own. They're supposed to work alongside the bishop, but you don't have to wait for a diocesan approval to launch an apostolate.
Exactly.
And then the USCCB's document, co-workers in the vineyard, kind of explains what kind of talents and that someone should have if they're going to have an apostolate.
Great. No, that's excellent. Additional information.
Yeah, and the most important thing is education. The bishops want you to have some catechesis education. And most of the dioceses have adult catechesis programs. And so then if you have some catechesis training, then you're more confident in going out and launching an apostolate and that you are going to have content on your side that's orthodox.
Right. Right. And I think too though is that we try to make people be all things to everybody. We want someone that's a leader and talented and has a theology degree, you know, and I think that it's much more effective to have those be three different people maybe. You know, and so we're together, you know, if you bring those people together, you can do that a lot more effectively, and each of you are experts in what you're doing, and you can, you know, your results are a lot better because you're leveraging each other's strengths rather than, like, putting all these requirements on every single individual and saying, well, if you want to do anything, you have to have certain this level of training or whatever else. That's a good thing, but I think that there's certain barriers like that that we have to be careful of in the church that may seem like a good idea from a top level and say, well, we need everybody to have this training, or we need everybody to do this, that ends up sort of squashing some of that, the freedom of people to kind of create and become those things. And I think we have to have a little bit of faith in people and a little bit of, we don't want to be too risk averse with a lot of stuff. I mean, if something happens, there can, you know, I think especially after the sex abuse scandal, we're very, very overly cautious about anything bad happening. And so that's why we don't utilize social media in the ways that we fully could, because we're scared. But we also have to step back, and in many ways, that's good for certain things, but I think that we need to step back again and say, it's okay if we mess up sometimes, you know? People know that we're human, we don't have to be perfect. It's okay if we say something wrong sometimes. We correct it, and we learn from it. And that's part of, like, being human and authentic. You know, not pretending that we're perfect, and not pretending that all of our organizations are perfect, and everybody, you know, is doing everything perfectly right, because we're not. That's a lie. And so I think accepting that and being okay with making some mistakes, I think that, I mean, a big part of success is failures, you know, and I think that we have to try a lot of things and fail at them. Before we finally find the things that are going to be most successful. And we have to be okay with failing. There's nothing wrong with failing at different things. And I'm not taking away from your point at all. I totally agree with what you're saying. I'm just kind of adding that on as something that when we think about those different restrictions and regulations we kind of put on it, I think that some of them are a reaction to kind of being afraid to fail, being afraid of people seeing us as, sinners and that we're not perfect and all that kind of stuff. And I think people forgive us for that more than we think. And the people that won't forgive us for it probably won't forgive us for anything anyway. So anyway, I need to wrap it up. So sorry, but thank you guys so much for your time. And,